are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
The year is 3129. Mankind is adrift in the stars. Giant spaceships hurtle the last of humanity towards their destiny, whatever it may be. Only one thing can keep them going and power these great ships, will feed the minds and spirits of these people. And that is the last brewing company to survive in the future, Circle Brewing. So great was their product that they indeed became the legendary Earth Brewers. But, you know, it's right now, 2018, or maybe 2019, depending on when you're listening to this. And you can get Circle Brewing right by going into Austin, by stopping into their brewery on Breaker Lane. Or you can get it in convenience stores where there's all sorts of good stuff. Martin, you're from the future. What do you think?
Well, I tell you, Austin is a city with no shortage of breweries, but this is some of the best I've ever had.
Well, there you go. You can't ask somebody who's going to give you a truer thing about beer than Mr. Martin Thomas, because he's an alcoholic.
OneOfUs.net is supported entirely by our subscribers, and that means you. You guys who are listening to this, we can't do this without you. Think about becoming a subscriber at the $2, $5, $10, or $25 level. Get lots of bonus content in our forums. And now our newest thing, we have a closed group on Facebook only for subscribers at any level. If you are already a subscriber or you just became one, please send an email to oneofusnet@gmail.com. Let me know what your Facebook page is, and I will add you to that closed group where we'll be having regular live videos and all sorts of special things, especially from the upcoming South by Southwest. You're not going to want to miss that. Man, if I knew Isabelle Huppert could be this creepy, I'm like, let her be all the horror movie villains. She should be the next Freddy Krueger. I'm just calling it now.
If I knew it was this easy to make friends in New York, I would have moved there years ago.
Totally, right? Yeah.
It's so friendly there.
It really is.
This fantasy world of New York.
Where dads buy their daughters lofts in Tribeca for graduation.
It's like
sadly enough, there are probably quite a few lofts in Tribeca that are purchased by fathers.
You know, I heard that and I thought, that's where Kelly Ripa lives.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, whatever.
Everyone, of my friends who live in New York, of which I visited several, a lot of them make a lot, pretty good money, and they live in a tiny little closet because that's all they can afford.
And if you, if you're living on the island of Manhattan, not the boroughs, you know, but the island of Manhattan, you're making at least six figures a year because you can't live there otherwise. you literally can't.
Very true. Unless you like know someone who owns
or
the place.
If you're in the movies and you have this, by New York standards, palatial spread that Isabelle Huppert is.
I don't know if there is a movie where anyone has, or TV show, where someone doesn't live in New York and has this astonishing apartment.
Oh, yeah, right. Like
who's always broke. They're always like, I don't know what I'm going to do for money.
Oh, so man, I don't know.
Shopping. Well,
you can sublet
home.
That fucking apartment and live in the closet. You could probably clear a couple thousand grand for that easy.
I think she's living in a suburb of that movie. Isn't it romantic? You're like, there's a romantic comedy fantasy world going on. She doesn't know.
Yeah.
She's in off in the village.
This is where shit gets dark.
unless
you're gay and then it's fine.
Yeah. Well, it's like, it doesn't matter what genre it is. If you live in New York, you have a palatial apartment. So she's in the horror fantasy in New York.
I want to ask you about Isn't It Romantic after this, because I'm curious. I wanted to see that movie.
I'll tell you about it. But let's talk about this movie, Greta. This actually played at TIFF first. So we actually had a written review from one of our guys who saw it at TIFF.
All right.
A podcast review. But it's finally coming around here. This is Neil Jordan, who is well known for being primarily an actor's director.
A guy who does Irish stuff.
He does a lot of Irish stuff. Probably, I mean, although it certainly wasn't his first film that he got like lots of kudos for, but the first one he became a big name was The Crying Game in 1992. The Butcher Boy in 1997 was big in Britain, but didn't really hit over here as well.
well, but he's done a lot of big movies like The Company of Wolves, Mona Lisa, Michael Collins, which people keep telling me I should go back and rewatch. There was apparently one of the screenwriting podcasts I listened to. Three of the people who were like teach screenwriting classes and everything all had the conclusion that Michael Collins was the best screenplay ever written.
Really?
Was the single most perfect screenplay. Also written by Neil Jordan.
It's a good Liam Neeson film, I think.
I remember liking it, but it's been so long. Anyway, the point is this guy's got a lot of experience under his belt.
Interview with the Vampire.
And he has toyed, Interview with the Vampire, and he has messed with horror before. Mm-hmm. This is more of a kind of suspense thriller. You know,
it's a psychological thriller,
right?
and there are, you know, it could have gone into Hitchcock territory. He opted not to do that. It pretty much this. I was kind of surprised because I knew the premise, and who knows, maybe that's why he kind of wanted to get ahead of it. But it gets right into it.
True, but it's never boring. Before we get right into it, I'm Chris.
I'm Frank. Sorry, spilling down my IPA.
Bo.
That's a Hefeweizen. You can't tell the difference between Hefeweizen.
Oh, I'm so sorry. No, I can't because I'm such a bad. If it's not cider, I'm lost. So
it's sweet. It's not an IPA. Okay, usually. Sorry. That's all right. I'm not offended. Anyway, Chloe Grace Moretz plays Frances, who is a person who has no business living in New York City.
Yeah, she is kind of a naive. I kind of wanted to, like, you know, scalp her and give like her place to one of my actor friends. Go, here, take it, enjoy.
She's one of those people that makes that little Jean and Beau that says serial killer on it click off.
She's kind of a naive. She's the movie and let's get into the first of many things that kind of raise an eyebrow about situations that this movie attempts to set up is they kind of make her out to be a bit of a naive trying to make her way in the big bad city. Mm. However, they also posit that she comes from fucking Boston, which people from Boston make people from New York look really nice.
Right. They even maybe says something. Well, this is like, all right, so she finds a handbag on the subway, and her roommate, played by horror staple Micah Monroe.
I love her eyes.
I love her.
She did a great job.
But she's like, what are you doing? Let's just take the money and go and like have a spa day. And she's like, no, we don't
need the money.
I can't do that. You don't. And Chloe Grace Moretz says, where I'm from, we don't do things like that.
No, they don't.
I was like,
in Boston, they would take that money. They would not have a spa day. They would buy drugs with it. And then they would shit in your purse.
I forgot she was from Boston. I thought she was from the Midwest.
Which would have made sense. Yeah, kind of like, why aren't you from like Skokie?
I would have accepted Vermont.
Absolutely. I live from a magical land where a social democrat is our senator.
But she's like, okay, well, I'm going to find out. It's got the person's ID in it, and I'm going to find them. And she tracks him down, and it's a older French lady, Isabelle Huppert, playing the titular Greta Hidegg. And she's very grateful. She's like, oh, my God, that's so sweet. I can't believe you brought it. Come on in. Let's have tea. They kind of hit it off and have this burgeoning friendship that starts developing.
Well, and made the more poignant by the fact that it comes out that Frances, Chloe Grace Moretz's character, has lost her mother recently.
Right.
And she's kind of on the outs with her dad, who she thinks has moved on too fast, and like he's dating somebody and, you know, doing.
But she's alone. Greta's
She's very alone. Like, she's got her roommate, who is it seems to be an old college friend, and she's kind of trying to get her to be more New York-y, but she's like, nah, I'm not really into that.
I'm more into this little subset of Boston we call our town.
Yeah, apparently, which is the section of Boston that is in New Hampshire. She goes to her waitress job, and she, you know, obviously not making enough money to live in this very expensive loft with her friend, and then, you know, she kind of becomes attracted to this woman in a filial sense.
Yeah.
That she's like, oh, she seems nice and she seems kind of lonely. And Greta herself is just like, oh, my daughter's away at a school in France. And so, you know, we haven't been really, you know, we were very close, but now we're not really talking.
It's kind of sort of a codependent thing on behalf of both of us as well, in a way.
It really, for the first act of this film, it just as easily could have ended up just being a sweet film about a relationship relationship between an older woman and a younger woman who become friends. Yeah. Yeah, but those movies exist.
I know they do.
Just saying. That is not the movie that we're in for, of course. This is Isabel being really creepy as we find out that something is seriously wrong with this lady, which is first realized, even though Micah Monroe suspects something's wrong here the whole
time. Because she's a New Yorker.
Because she's a New Yorker. And, well, partially she just doesn't trust anyone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and she's just kind of like, this lady's kind of playing a long con on you. I don't know what it is, but, you know, at some point she's going to ask you for money or something.
Right, yeah. Which did seem more reasonable than yes. what the actual story is when Chloe's in her house and she opens up this drawer and she finds tons of identical purses, like the one she found on the subway,
yeah.
all with IDs in them and the same things and with Post-it notes on them with girls' names and phone numbers.
Yeah. And what a great like scene that is. And what, just, you know, so I wish they hadn't included that in the trailer. And I wish I hadn't watched the trailer, but it's such a great reveal.
Oh, I lucked out because I didn't.
And, oh, you didn't? Yeah, that was definitely great to see
within
it?
That context. It was one of those scary moments in the movie that we spoiled.
And she yeah. turns into she basically immediately realizes, okay, there's no excuse for this situation.
Yeah, you can't really logic your way out of this.
I am out of
how lonely you are.
And Greta is like not going to take no for an answer. She's like, no, please, I can explain. She's trying to play the completely sweet lady role yeah. the whole way. On some level, she is that person, except she's also completely fucking broken as well.
Yeah, she can turn on a dime.
Full on psychotic level. And it's just watching this disintegrate as she turns into this really creepy stalker, and then it gets much worse, but I don't want to tell you what happens. I don't want to tell you the point where it gets super heavy.
Yes.
But I mean,
so it's spectacularly heavy.
In a lot of ways, this is a kind of traditional stalker movie. It's not going down in terms of plot beats, things very different than
we've
seen with single white yeah. female or anything
the real twist is kind of the, you know, obviously, you brought up single white female, but this is a different dynamic because it is a younger woman and an older woman, mm-hmm. which is something we haven't seen before.
Right.
You know, it's a woman on woman. God, and a testament to Hu Perry's performance in this, if she had been a guy doing this to a young woman, I don't think I could watch it.
No,
you know? It's only the fact that I can go like, well, at least there's no, like, sexual element here, because that would put this almost over
well,
the top, where it's just like, oh my god, this is too creepy.
I think the bystanders wouldn't have stood for it as much. I think that's one of the
exactly.
things about this movie, is like, yeah. everyone's like, well, this is just like this old lady. Why are you afraid yeah. of this old lady? I mean,
exactly. Why don't you beat the living shit
exactly.
out of this old lady?
She's like, I mean, come on, just knock her down, or, you know, but I think it makes it all more, when there's so many lifelines around you, but none of them can help you, and you know, I love that.
And yeah, she phoned a friend instead.
Yeah, exactly.
I think one of the problems with this movie, though, is that it really does pull you out of it. There are points where you're like, are you the stupidest protagonist in a yes. horror film of all time, Chloe Grace Moretz, or what? She just makes some of the dumbest moves once
yeah,
she already knows uh-huh. the scenario. And there's also kind of like things where you're like, she's an old lady.
Yeah.
You're like, come on. And of course, one of the things that drives me crazy in every fucking horror movie that they do it over and over again, I doubt my or anyone else's words are going to stop it, but that thing like, okay, you did it. You knocked him out. What do you do next? You stab them 300
yeah,
times
yeah,
with
exactly.
a butcher knife is what you do.
You don't double tap.
You go around.
Make sure that shit takes.
You don't go, yeah, exactly.
You should have to spend a long time with the cops explaining that no, this person was trying to kill me, and that's why I stabbed them 6,400 yeah. times.
I'm not crazy. I just want to make sure that they can't be again.
I've seen the goddamn movies. I ain't letting this person get a second
you
shot.
Cut her head off and you carried it with you. I wasn't taking my eyes off that head.
Man. Yeah. I was waiting until I saw the cops.
You know, there is a lot of stuff where you're just plausibility, like, it just goes out the window, but, I mean, I think Moretz on the whole does a good, if work been like job here.
Well, she's yeah,
I mean,
like
she's. Oh, I mean, how can she can only do so much? That she's got the least flashier of the two leads, and
true.
Next to a pair who just like by just standing there, I mean, commands the screen, and just,
yeah.
you know, I mean,
and she is terrific. She owns this movie.
Yeah. Isabel Huppert. She elevates this movie to, you know, at least two grades more of what it should be. Because if this had been I'm not going to, you know, throw an actress under the bus here, but if this had been an actress of lesser caliber, it just would have been like, okay, well, I don't really care about any of this. But Isabel Huppert is so commanding of a presence and and so fascinating that you're just like, I'm kind of in for this, even though Chloe Grace Moretz keeps making these fucking dunderheaded mistakes.
Well, she's also so intriguing as well as a villain. Yeah. You want to see her. You're terrified of her and just by her presence. But at the same time, she's so romantic of a villain as well.
She's so convinced of her own rightness and that she's not doing anything wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, she, to her mind, she is just a sweet old lady that is just trying to help.
She's searching for a daughter.
Yeah. And she's like, well, you need a mom. I'm offering my services.
Yeah.
I don't know. She's like the Anna Wintour of serial killers.
There you go.
Good Lord. Now, like, the Helen Mirren's like, hey, y'all want to make a sequel?
that's who could have played. I was like, who else could have been in this? Who else would have said yes to this? I think,
It was odd that Huppert was, before this, she was in a movie where she was the one being stalked.
L. So talk about, no. Like typecasting there, jeez.
But this also features Colm Feore as a small role as Chloe Grace Moretz's dad, who if you've been watching The Umbrella Academy, he plays the now dead professor of the academy, Stephen Ree.
Who's kind of Neil Jordan's muse.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of his films. Has a small but important role here
as the worst private detective. Yeah, exactly.
Literally the worst private detective in New York City.
Just for them to hang out and drink. I mean, really. Come on.
You're like, Philip Marlowe book.
there should have been an extra scene with the father going like, so have you looked for my daughter yet? Oh man, I'm on that. I'm so sorry. I'm completely on that.
Yeah, there's a point where he has all the evidence right in front of him. He knows exactly who the person is, and then it's like days later he bothers to show up. Oh, and you're like, what is happening in this movie?
Yeah, it's the women of this film that really make, you know, really like, you know, have any sense of what's going on or what to do about it, really.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Micah Monroe really just, oh, man, I don't want to say anything.
Well, no, I like Micah Monroe a lot, and she, although she is given kind of a thankless part for the first two acts, she has such a strong finish.
Really?
You're just like, wow, great. I love you, Micah Monroe.
God.
You're welcome. You're welcome in my movies anytime.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's go to final thoughts. Frank.
You know, it's funny. I was shopping at Red Bull recently, and I saw this shirt that says, my sexuality is middle-aged actresses. And I almost got it because I thought, you know, that's really funny. But, no.
Someone should totally wear that during the Oscars this year.
Yeah, it's like, Glenn Close for the win. But, I like this film. It reminds me a lot of those 60s, what they call the hag pictures that came out after Baby Jane.
All the Joan Crawford films and Betty Davis.
Yeah, what they call Grand...
Hush, Hush, Sweet Charlotte. Yeah, that was a great one.
The Grand Dame Guignol sort of thing.
Straight Jacket, Berserk.
And this is like a throwback to one of those. And it really does go... I mean, this is a really balls to the wall sometimes. I mean, there's a scene with Huppert in that restaurant where she just loses it. And I was like, oh my... I was like laughing hysterically. This is amazing. Like, I love this. She's just going so crazy. And every, you know... Neil Jordan going for it. He fucking wrote it. I love this. And I think between this one and Ma, I think that genre is making a comeback, which I really like.
Looking forward to Ma.
I'm really looking forward to Ma. Oh my god.
Ma, yeah. This fucking trailer for Ma is freaking me out. No, I'm like, I'm not going to go to that party. Fuck that shit. It's like, I ain't going to be the first white guy to die in this movie so you can reverse your fucking trope. Fuck you guys.
Welcome to Ma. Anyways, but I'm hoping that genre makes a comeback. Because it's really a lot of fun, and this movie is, even though people do dumb things like most people do in slasher film or psycho stalker films, it's still a very fun movie. But what I like most about it is that it has Neil Jordan's stamp, which is his penchant for strong women. You know,
yeah.
I was, you know, Kirsten Dunst and Interview with the Vampire, Jodie Foster and the Brave One, you know, and Isabel Huppert. And here he has a knack for really writing interesting women who are on different levels of fucked up, but who are so entrancing in their own way. And I can't think of many directors who actually take the time to do that. And yes, it is, you know, the Chloe Grace Moretz character does make a lot of, you know, stupid mistakes. She's not really written that convincingly, probably because it was much more fun to write Isabel Huppert's character. But it's a very fun film. It's very, it has the right kind of level of darkness, but also playfulness as well, which is, you know, which is exactly what you want with this. It's stylish, and at the end, it does go to a place that's just, it's crazy. It's a crazy, like, Grand Dame Guignol hag picture, and I love it. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 green handbags on the subway station. Sorry, I stole it.
As far as the positive aspects, yeah, Frank's really done a good job of hitting them on the head. This movie has a lot of style, and like I said, I think that's mostly due to Pera and her performance. I think Frank might have something there in so far as maybe Neil Jordan was so taken aback by that himself that he kind of focused on that to a fault, because there's everything around her needs more fleshing out, you know. And when she's doing a scene with Moretz, it works. And when Moretz and Micah Monroe have a couple of scenes together, that's working very well. There's the stage dressing is very, very flimsy, though, and it could be better. This it's kind of disappointing, because it's a missed opportunity that if you'd had somebody as interesting as Isabelle Huppert playing Frances, you might have gotten a really different thing. Somebody with the chops to really go toe to toe with her and still yet be inhabit the quality of a naive young woman. And granted,
Ellie Fanning would have been a much better choice.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. That being said, the style and the fun do kind of put this movie over from what is probably no more than a strong C to a firm B or even a B plus at times. I wasn't completely engulfed in the movie, but I did have a fair amount of fun doing it. And if you're looking for a good psych thriller to tide you over until the summer, then this is a good one for you. On the whole, though, I think I'm only going to give it 7.5 things that you should never fucking pick up on the subway.
Yeah, as much as I think this movie is incredibly well written in dialogue, the dialogue is all terrific. Mm. The things that Huppert does with this part and the way that Jordan chooses to film the really creepy sequences, the things he does with her, are really well done. But when it comes to plotting and which is all really obvious and we've seen a billion times before, and like just really rookie horror and suspense movie mistakes that he makes, it's kind of almost embarrassing how bad those moments are. I was just like, I mean, I was wincing at some of them, like, Jesus Christ, Jordan, you could have. Why didn't you bring on someone who really likes these kind of films to consult on the script?
Fair, this isn't his genre. He doesn't do the psycho stalker killer genre.
Right, but still, you're like, you've made enough films, you should have totally known better. You should have brought someone in.
Trust your own instincts, right? I think, well, this is what most of them do. Maybe I should do it too.
Because it brought those things really bring the quality of just, we've been through this material so many times before, and the implausibility, and even some moments of like really just awkward scenes in the film that feel stilted. I think it really drops down the film by quite a few numbers, despite the strength of the female leads here. And of course, especially Isabelle Huppert, who's peerless. I just couldn't, there's a point at the end. I was like, well, I didn't even dislike it. I liked it, but I don't know if I'm ever going to watch this again. It really falls on the line of minor thrillers for me, but one that's worth a look. I give it 6 out of 10 sleeper trunks.
There you go.
See, perfect. That's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing.
See my pun? Yeah. I got some pun. There you go, guys. You got your pun for the month. No more. Go talk to Brian Salisbury if you want more puns.